Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Andrew Strain, and I'm serving as the hearings officer today for the February 4th, 2021 hearings officer meeting of the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. I'll call the meeting to order in agenda item number one. For our second agenda item, the approval of the agenda, I will ask the staff, including Robbie or others, if we have any changes to today's published agenda.
I have not heard of any changes.
All right. Hearing of no changes, I will approve the agenda as it's been presented. Item three are our no action public interest comments. Any member of the public wishing to address the hearings officer on any item not listed as an announcement of appeal rights or public hearing item or on any other issue may do so at this time. However, public comments on the announcement of appeal rights or public hearing items will be taken up at the time that those agenda items are heard. Please note that the hearings officer is prohibited by law from taking immediate action on or discussing issues raised by the public that are not listed on the agenda. I'm going to turn the microphone over to Robbie now, who will look for a show of hands for anyone who's participating today that would like to address the hearings officer on a non-agenda or non-appeal rights item. Robbie?
Any members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer may do so at this time by utilizing the hand-raising feature of the GoToWebinar app. The hand icon is located on the tab to the left of the GoToWebinar control panel. If you'd like to comment, please raise your hand and I will announce and unmute you. You'll have 3 minutes to make your comments. No hands were raised, so we can continue with the agenda.
Thank you, Robbie. Let's move to agenda item number four, the announcement of appeal rights. I want to let everyone who is listening today know that any decision of the hearings officer is appealable to the TRPA Governing Board within 21 days of the hearings officer decision. The application fee and appeal application can be found at the TRPA website. We'll move on to agenda item number five, public hearing items. Our first item is agenda item 5A, Garnero Residential Modification of Eligible Historic Resource, 919 Los Angeles Avenue, South Lake Tahoe, California. The APN is 026-241-002. The TRPA file number is ERSP2020-1795. Julie Roll, I believe this is your item. Would you like to begin, please?
Yes, thank you. Hi, Andrew. This is Julie Roll, and I reviewed this residential addition project. There have been no changes to the staff report as published online, and I've not received any public comment on this item at all.
Thank you, Julie. Do we have a representative of the applicant here today?
We do. I think Victoria is on the line with us. She's the architect.
Victoria, would you like to say a few words regarding the project?
Great, yes, of course. Hi, everybody. I'm Victoria Ryan, and I'm the director of the Lake Office. Regarding the project, my client is actually the developer of the office. He was very specific about what he wanted to do with the addition. Once we agreed on room placement, I reviewed the outcome of the proposed Association's architectural limitations and made sure that our design would pass the review, made sure that we didn't exceed too far storage limit, that 3,000 square foot house.
I'm sorry, Victoria, can everyone hear her?
It's cutting.
I'm hearing about every fourth or fifth word.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me better now?
Much better. Thank you.
Okay, great. Sorry. I was too far from the microphone. Okay, so starting over, my name is Victoria Reyes. I work for Air Design and Draft. So for this project, my client is actually a developer, and so he was very specific about what he wanted for the addition. Once we agreed on room, I reviewed the Altavo Forest architectural limitations and made sure our design would pass their review. Next, I focused on building out in a way where it left the existing building intact, hoping not to mess with the structural, since it is an older building. My thought here was also to blend in and give the client the space he wants. I proposed the same roof pitches and materials, thinking this will help maintain a Tahoe Mountain appearance and make the addition seem less noticeable. For the garage and access to it, I was really trying to keep as many trees and natural landscapes as we could. It is a big, beautiful green lot, so it was important to us that we didn't lose too much of that scenery. And lastly, we added a roof over the entry and a covered back patio for entertainment, and added big rustic posts and beams, hoping that that'll add to the mountain cabin appeal. That's kind of where we were at for the design. If anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Well, thank you, Victoria. And yes, when you're close to the microphone, we can hear you clearly, but there wasn't all that consistent. So let me just re-ask or ask it. Can you please, since we're in the Al Tahoe Harrison Tract Historic District in South Lake Tahoe, can you please shed a little bit of light and describe the design elements specifically that you chose and are proposing as part of the modification that will remain consistent with those that are found in the Al Tahoe Harrison Tract Historic District? What design elements did you select that would reinforce that structure and the modification as a historic in nature?
Yeah, we tried to keep it as similar to the existing building as possible, the same roof pitches. We're proposing the same materials. We really didn't add any modern or any other aesthetic to it.
Good, thank you, Victoria, that helps. At this point, I'd like to open the public hearing and ask if anyone participating today would like to offer public comment on this item. Robbie, if you would please look for the show of hands.
Yeah, so any members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer may do so at this time by utilizing the hand-raising feature of the GoToWebinar app. Please raise your hand and I will announce and unmute you, and you will have 3 minutes to make your comments. No hands were raised, so we can continue with the agenda item.
Thank you. Seeing how we have no public comment on this item, I will close the public hearing and take action on this project. Based on the information that's been presented today, including the staff report, the findings contained for Chapter 4, Chapter 7 for the historic resources, the project conformance checklist, and the finding of no significant environmental effect, I will approve the project based on the staff report and subject to the conditions that are contained in the draft permit. Let's move on to item 5B. The Durr Family 2016 Trust Land Capability Challenge, located at 8106 Brockway Vista Avenue, Placer County, California, APN 090-073-017. TRPA file number is LCAP 2020-0490. Julie, I believe this is also your item.
Thanks, Andrew. This is Julie again. We also have Phil Scholes on the line. He's the soil scientist acting on behalf of TRPA, who reviewed this project and did all the field work and wrote the report. So he's available for questions. And I just want to let you know there's been no changes to the staff report as published online, and no public comments received ahead of this meeting.
Thank you, Julie. Phil, anything you'd like to add from your perspective?
No, I know that there was a question that was asked earlier this week, and I responded with an email, and I didn't know if you received that.
I don't believe I did, but...
Okay. The question that was conveyed to me was, you know, how it was not apparent in the photographs where the soil boundary was.
Yes.
And so the issue out on that, that's sort of unique to this one little part of the Kings Beach area, where there is prevailing winds kick up the sand and blow it landward. And so this property has beach frontage, and then it's got a backyard, but there's about 10 inches of sand that's been blown in over who knows how many decades. And so it just looks like it's one big beach property. But when you dig through the 10 inches of the sand, you find the original soil that has been buried. So it's not visually apparent where that boundary is until you dig the pits. There is another clue about where the soil change occurs, and that's where the large Jeffrey pines become established. They typically aren't going to grow in the beach environment, but they grow on a more stabilized soil. And so where the line was drawn, and it was, you know, the handiwork of Roger Poff, who's online with us also, you know, that line pretty much correlates to where those Jeffrey pines begin.
Thank
you, Phil.
There's
a little bit of a slope right there, but it's not otherwise very obvious.
Yes, in looking at photographs, I would agree with that. Good, thank you. Anyone representing the applicant wish to speak? All right, hearing none. At this point, I will open the public hearing for agenda item 5B. Robbie, if you will please look for a show of hands of anyone who'd like to offer public comment.
Any members of the public wishing to address the hearings officer may do so at this time by using the raising feature of the GoToWebinar app. If you'd like to make a comment, I'll unmute you and you will have 3 minutes to make your comment. No hands were raised, so we can continue with this agenda item.
Thank you, Robbie. Seeing how we have no public comment to offer on this item, I will close the public hearing and take action on the project. Based on the information contained in the staff report and as presented this afternoon at our hearing, including the findings and conclusions reached by the TRPA staff and TRPA soils consultant, I will approve the land capability challenge as presented. Let's move on to item 5C, the Hardy Land Capability Challenge, located at 598 Tyner Way, Washoe County, Nevada, APN 125-511-09. The TRPA file number is LCAP 2020-0394. Julie?
Hi, this is Julie again. No changes to the staff report on this one either, and no public comments received. Phil Scholes also worked on this one, so he would be available for questions on this one as well.
Thank you, Julie. Phil, any information you'd like to present?
I also received a question via Julie about the soil mapping on this particular site. And the question was raised, you know, essentially, why does the soil boundary not follow the topographic contours? And this is a little more complicated. It gets into the geology of the site, and because it's pretty much just a rocky hillside. And if you were to go back in time to look at how this hillside formed, you know, you'd realize that the underlying bedrock was formed by a lava flow. And that lava flow, as it sort of moved or migrates down the hillside, some of it cools a little bit faster than some other parts. And so it creates little benches and little steeper areas between them. The point being is that the underlying bedrock is more like a warped board than it's just sort of a, you know, a straight sloping board. And then you have on top of that rocks that have tumbled down the hillside over, you know, tens of thousands of years and sort of piled on top of it. So it makes it sort of difficult to see, you know, where those slope breaks are. But in this case, you know, we have the same soil type across the whole site. It's just there are patches of the site that are less steep than others. And so, you know, we find this kind of a mapping where we're not necessarily following contours is, you know, something we would see in the Incline Village all the way over to the Tahoe City area, where that particular area of Lake Tahoe under ancient times, you know, was having volcanic eruptions that were essentially creating the landscape, whereas other parts of Lake Tahoe had much different geology to it.
Thank you, Phil. Yes, in looking at the proposed map of land capabilities, that was one of the more unusual set of soil or land capability boundaries I think I've come across.
Yeah, I'm in some, you know, in years past, decades past, the topographic surveys were not as precise as they are now. So, you know, if this challenge had been done 20 years ago, it might have just been one soil type with what we call a soil phase. You know, in the what you probably noticed as you looked at land capability challenges, a phase would be like 0 to 16% and 16 to 30%. So this one has two phases on it of the same soil, whereas, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, it might have just been lumped as one because they weren't able to tease out the accuracy that they can do now.
Does that explain, Phil, the related question that I discussed with Julie earlier in the week in looking at the neighborhoods land capability map that was provided in the staff report? It identifies class 1A, class 1C, class 3, and then class 4 districts, but no class 2. I didn't see that. And modifier.
And that gets to a completely sort of unrelated kind of issue. But at the time they mapped the soils in 1974, they did not feel that they were encountering deep soils on steep slopes. And it was later, you know, found out that there was a significant number of areas, particularly on the east side of Lake Tahoe, where you have that granitic geology, where you could have something that was 30 or 40% slope and it still had soils that went down, you know, 40, 50 or 60 inches. And so they just thought it was going to be hitting bedrock if it was on a steep slope. And so they called it class 1A. And so they just didn't map class 2. The other thing keeping in mind is that the class 1 through class 7 was not actually part of the soil survey. That was a separate report put together by Robert Bailey, and he took information from the soil survey and applied his labels to it. So yes. I can't really fault the soil survey for, you know, not having class 2 because they themselves didn't invent class 2.
Thank you. And you mentioned, Phil, that the deeper soils were formed from the granitic parent material?
We find them all over the basin. Where it's been most obvious is on the east side. But like in this area, which is Incline Village, it's just that the material that has eroded from above has been eroding long enough that but doesn't roll all the way down the hill, has made soils deep enough that they qualify as a deep soil, or we're not encountering bedrock.
Yeah. And on this site, go ahead.
I was just going to say, on this site, they did have a pit that was dug down to, I think, about 7.5 feet, and they still didn't hit bedrock on it. And that was right below the house. And so, you know, just, you know, you look at the site and you think you're looking at a bunch of bedrock, but in fact, when you dig into some of these areas, it's just not, it's just surface material that has eroded, or eroded is not always the right word, because there were times in the last ice age that essentially you had sheets of snow and ice that sort of pushed the rocks down in a somewhat irregular kind of format and just coated the surface with, you know, rocks that are the size, you know, of, you know, laundry baskets or bigger, and just left them there.
How many test pits were used on this site?
Two were used, one below the house and one up in the, I guess it's sort of the northeast corner. And it was unusual to do two test pits on a site like this. A lot of residential sites are, you know, when you talk about test pits, really only doing often just one, if it's just sort of a standard size lot. In this case, there was a flatter area up at the top of the property that I suspected was potentially shallow to bedrock. And I said, if you guys want to call that, you know, class four, you're going to have to, you know, dig a pit up there to prove it. And they did.
I see. Yes, it looks like it's nearly 40,000 square feet in size. So it's a larger than, let's say, a normal standard lot, as you mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they had to hand dig that pit up, what they call site number two, because there's no way to get a backhoe to that location. You'd have to helicopter it in.
Sure. You might need a piece of tracked equipment instead. Yeah. Do you expect then, Phil, that given the explanation that you provided, that we would find in this neighborhood more of the class two appearing?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you can't sort of make that assumption across the board. In other words, no. Just, you know, you could go one or two lots over and you could be hitting shallower soils and never get class two. But, you know, almost anywhere in the basin, and I know this is a horrible generalization to make, but almost anywhere that's below 7,000 feet, we should expect to find, you know, some areas that have class two or deeper soils in them. It's not until you get up to the higher elevations that the, you know, snowpack and natural erosion over, you know, tens of thousands of years just hasn't allowed soils to accumulate. But as you get lower and lower in elevation, stuff that eroded from above gets deposited down there.
Not unlike a sending area and a receiving area.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you.
Sure.
Well, I appreciate you taking time to shed light on that. That helps a lot. At this point, anyone of representing the applicant like to offer a comment?
Hi, yeah, this is Adam Wright. I'm sitting in for Wyatt Ogilvy today. We've read and reviewed the staff summary, and we're in agreement with their recommendation. No further comment at this point, but we would like to reserve the right to respond to any potential public comment.
Thank you, Adam. With that, we will open the public hearing on this item. Robbie, if you will please look for a show of hands of anyone who would like to offer public input or comment on this item.
Any member of the public who would like to address the hearings officer may do so at the time by utilizing the hand-raising feature of the GoToWebinar app. Please raise your hand and I will announce and unmute you, and you'll have 3 minutes to make your comments. No hands were raised, so we can continue with the review of this agenda item.
Thank you, Robbie. With that, I will close the public hearing and take action on the item. Based on the information contained in the staff report, the conclusions reached by the TRPA staff, the information offered today, and the report that was prepared and submitted as part of the staff report by Phil Scholes, I will approve the land capability challenge for the Hardy parcel as proposed. Let's move on to item D, 5D, lakewide control of aquatic invasive plants project in both in California and Nevada, the initial environmental checklist, and the mitigated finding of no significant effect. Dennis Zabalgo, I believe this is your item.
Yes, thank you. This is Dennis Zabalgo. I am the Aquatic Resources Program Manager for the Tyler Regional Planning Agency, and my role is to help oversee the implementation of our overall aquatic invasive species management plan. And this document is the required environmental analysis and the findings necessary to implement projects within the lake to control invasive aquatic plant species. It's an important tool for us moving forward. We've had quite a bit of success achieving localized eradication in some smaller areas around the lake of aquatic invasive plants. And with some of that success has garnered us additional funding to continue projects and add new tools to continue that success as well. And one of those items is what is called the Lake Tahoe AIS Control Action Agenda, which among other things really calls out for increasing pace and scale of control projects. And in order to do that, we have to have this document that's before the hearings officer today in order to conduct projects at a larger scale in the lake using multiple methods of control, all mechanical methods. And so we have Rob Bruick from Haughey Bruick was the consultant that that put together the analysis and documents. It has gone through the CEQA step, and now we are here for the TRPA portion of this. And so I can turn it over to the next speaker, Rob Bruick, or I don't believe Nicole Cartwright was able to join us. I'm not 100% sure, but I'll let the hearings officer decide who should be the next speaker.
Thank you, Dennis. And do we have any changes in your staff report or
yes.
conclusions?
Yes.
Was issued?
Yes. I have an edit to the staff report. And I've emailed a copy of those edits to Robbie Graves, but I can read them, and also edits to permit conditions, however you would like to proceed.
Please. Yes. Let's read them into the record unless, Marcia feels otherwise.
That's fine.
I can also share it. Everybody can view it if you prefer that.
That would be helpful if we could do both, Robbie. Yes, thank you.
And Robbie, it's the second one I emailed you just a minute ago.
Got it. One moment. Can everybody see this okay?
Yes.
Yes.
So the edit to the staff report would reflect the, this is item one, chapter four, required findings, item A, where the initial staff report referred to a project and a project title. We would be removing that and referring to the Lake Tahoe Environmental Improvement Program action priority. The Aquatic Invasive Species Program is identified as one of the action priorities within the program, so this edit reflects that, since this will be used for multiple projects lakewide rather than a specific project that we would be referring to within the staff report. Is there any questions on this edit?
No, I think you can proceed, Dennis. Thank you.
Okay. And then also edits to the permit. Draft condition, special condition two, we would be changing the date from August 2020 to January 2021, and that's based on the information provided by Haughey Bruick that reflects the edits made by after the Tahoe Resource Conservation District Board meeting. And then in special condition five, this adds some actionable items by TRPA once a report is received from the Tahoe Resource Conservation District, the permittee, on pre-project plans. And so this would simply add that TRPA will review reports, request modifications if needed, and accept the report to allow work to commence as the at the locations identified.
Good, thank you. Dennis, one question on the findings. Chapter 4, thank you. You picked up that one. That's good. Chapter 4A, finding with making more specific the title of the proposed action in the EIP element. That's good. I thought I saw the same project title placeholder under Chapter 81 findings as well. 81C, and maybe we could at least look at that and see if we need to have that finding updated as well. Maybe we don't.
Scrolling there now. See, yes, that is correct, and we can make a similar edit consistent with the language in the Chapter 4 findings if that's acceptable.
Marcia, will that work?
Yes. So it would be the same language that we have here on the screen.
Correct.
I think the finding is worded slightly differently, but the information and the rationale is the same. Yeah, the special use finding looks at neighborhood character detrimentally affecting the applicable planning area. But that same project title placeholder is in 81C as well, 3C.
So we would be striking the reference to implements the project title, EIP project number, and using the same language that's been added that's showing on the screen.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Thank you. All right, Dennis, anything else?
There is one more edit, but I believe Rob Ruick would be best to address that edit as it's part of the FONSI.
Very good, Rob.
I am now unmuted. Hello, Andrew. Rob Bruick here with Haugi Bruick Associates. We were contracted by Tahoe RCD to prepare the environmental documents for the project and have been working on this for a couple of years now. And I understand it'd be helpful if I provided maybe a summary of some of the changes that have occurred since the document was circulated to the public back in August. One of those being the bottom of the page currently on the screen, which is a proposed edit to the mitigation measure Hydro 1, which is for water quality monitoring and reporting. And if you're okay with that approach, I'll just jump right in.
Yes, please, Rob.
And in addition to myself, Nicole Cartwright is now on the meeting. And so if you have questions afterwards for Nicole or I, we both could try to offer up answers. I'm going to do a quick summary of comments we got on the draft document that was circulated in August, and also comments we got during the CEQA approval process at the Tahoe RCD board, and what those ended up being. We don't have this to put up on the screen, but I think it'll be pretty easy to follow. We got a comment letter from the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board on the public review draft of the IS-IEC-EA. It was a three-party document prepared for the Tahoe RCD, for TRPA, and the Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit as the NEPA lead. They requested some changes to water quality monitoring program that was included in the project description, so basically part of the proposed project, not a mitigation measures. And they asked that they have the opportunity to request pre- and post-treatment field meter water quality sampling. We didn't have that in the document. And they want to be able to do that wherever there's a unique or complex control location, maybe a new type of location that hasn't been permitted in the past, so they can collect some more data on how water quality is either potentially impacted or benefits from AIP control. They also requested a change to the description of how benthic barriers, the mats that are placed on the lake bottom or on a tributary bottom. They asked for some clarity on how those barriers would be secured to the bottom of the lake, and if there is spill material brought in, where that material would come from, how it would be kept clean of basically invasive species or seeds or particle sizes that are too small. And so we added the detail they requested for that control method. They requested an addition to the hazardous materials mitigation measure that's specific to spill prevention and response. So any types of boats or equipment that are used out in the lake or marshes or tributaries, that make sure that any of the people working on those pieces of equipment are trained in spill response and that the materials needed to handle a spill are available. So we added some more detail on that. And finally, they added a request to modify mitigation Hydro 1 in the document, which is water quality compliance and monitoring, to make sure that if the UVC control method, that's the light that kills the plants, to make sure that when that method is being used, since it's new in the lake, that there is procedures in place to monitor and make sure it doesn't cause harmful algal blooms or harm benthic macroinvertebrates or increase water temperatures that could impact beneficial uses, you know, native species and such. We had mitigations in there to monitor that, and they just asked for some more specificity. And the proposed edit at the bottom of the page that's currently on the screen to item D in Hydro 1 is specific to that request when using UVC light. They asked for surveys pre and post treatment for benthic macroinvertebrates to make sure there's no long-term impact. And I believe that during your conversation with Dennis this week about this item, you just had a question about, well, what would happen if long-term monitoring showed some kind of negative adverse impact to the BMI. And so we added this sentence to the measure that says, if monitoring indicates adverse impacts are occurring to BMI and those are the species that are associated with good water quality or improved water quality, so the good part of the BMI species list. If we see that the UVC control methods would be paused as necessary to further investigate the monitoring results and adjust the control actions to eliminate impacts. So maybe it would require a new control measure to be used for AIP in that location. Maybe we would just need more data to make sure that we're not creating a long-term impact. And as a side note, the UVC light, there is other pilot studies going on right now, and they're actually collecting the data, the post-project monitoring right now, to further aid in this, in the information that we have available on how the UVC impacts or does not impact or benefits BMI. And that information is supposed to be available sometime later this year, maybe in the spring or early summer, and will help in the agency's permitting of this control method. So those are the changes that related to Lahontan's comment on the document. And there was only two comment letters received on the document. The other was from the Tahoe Area Water Purveyors Association. And they just wanted to compliment that the document had protections around their water intakes to make sure their water quality is not impacted if AIP control is being done near water intakes in the lake. And then there were several changes made to the environmental documents during the Tahoe RCD board process. There were some comments and we made some responses and changes to documents. There's about six of them. In the draft document, we had referenced the Tahoe RCD as basically the project proponent And we went through based on board comments and made sure that said that the Tahoe RCD or their partners or other project proponents, basically, because anybody that wants to implement AIP control could use this document to help them get their permitting to do it. We made a revision in chapter one of the environmental document to clarify that the NEPA document may also be used by other federal agencies other than the Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit to someday work with AIP. And that would most likely be federal agencies that provide funding to do work and would need a NEPA decision. And we made a couple changes to the project description, one specific to the dredging technique, to clarify, make it crystal clear that dredging would only occur in places where maintenance dredging is allowed. So where dredging has occurred in the past, there would be no new dredging areas. And this document only addresses dredging that would be done to control AIP species, not to help with recreational access or other purposes. And under the indirect control method, which is right now it's called laminar flow aeration. It's like a bubble curtain that has been used in the lake in a few locations. It's not necessarily a measure that eliminates AIP directly, but it can be used with other measures to keep fragments from moving to outside of a project area or to improve the amount of oxygen in the water, which can help benefit the habitat for non-invasive plants. We also had some additional information about laminar flow, and some pilot studies have been done in the lake. And so there were changes based on a report from that pilot report that were made to the document, because that report came out after we finalized it. So there were some corrections. We made a couple revisions to mitigation measures specific to determining persons that would decide if a habitat was suitable for different special status species. So that's under the biological resources. And also to clarify who would be responsible in permitting to determine if a control site is in a culturally sensitive area, which is the tribal one mitigation measure. And that was just to make sure it was crystal clear on who in this process would be making those determinations. Instead of just saying biologist, it's an agency approved biologist, for example. We had to make one change to Bio-4, that's the mitigation measure to avoid impacts to fish. And it was basically being more specific about which control measures can be used in areas where fish are potentially spawning. And then finally, we revised the impact analysis where we were talking about water quality and potential impacts from laminar flow aeration, to again address the study that was produced last year that we didn't have when we first did the draft environmental document that shows less concern over potential water quality impacts using that control method. And all of those are in revision mode and in the documents that have been uploaded to both the Tahoe RCD website and to TRPA's website where these environmental documents are shown. And just again to note, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to help answer them. And Nicole Cartwright's now on the call as well, along with Dennis.
Anything else, Rob?
That, I think, summarizes where we're at.
Thank you. Nicole, would you like to make any remarks?
Hi, everybody, and sorry for my tardiness, hopping from one call to the next, but no, I appreciate Rob and Dennis's summary of all of the edits made to date. If there's any specific questions about project description or mitigation, happy to help answer what we can.
Thank you, Nicole. I have a question for Rob regarding the BMI. I see the changes made to essentially come back with an action step in the event that adverse impacts are detected. Were you able to detect, Rob, during the analysis, or is it generally understood that there may be a difference between short-term and long-term effects or impacts to BMI species in these situations?
what they, the one pilot test, and sorry, my dog is waiting for my son to come in the front door. She might hear him in the background. The first pilot study that we have, the work was done in October and the monitoring was done the next summer. And it showed basically benefits to BMI with the improved water quality, the BMI species that would be present with improved water quality were there and present at a greater number post-project. So that's the, you know, sort of, I mean, you could call it long-term or short-term monitoring. We haven't yet been able to add the follow-up surveys from years, several years ongoing, and that's what's happening and is going to be reported soon this year.
So we're after trying to understand whether or not there are long-term adverse impacts from this treatment method.
Understood. And right. our technical team that was working on this and is still working on those other pilot programs is Melanie Green from Cardno. And her summary to me was that basically seeing the improvement or no adverse impacts that 6 or 8 months later would indicate that the BMI were improved and we don't have basically a long-term impact able to be determined based on the short-term monitoring.
Do you think any we need to identify long-term monitoring or long-term adverse impacts in your addition? Or we got it covered?
Yeah, I guess if your point, the question is, in the change that we're proposing, should we put a some kind of timing on it?
Well, the treatments were indicated to ensure there are no long-term adverse impacts, and it sounds like the jury might still be out on whether or not there are any short-term impacts. I realize that BMI data, it doesn't always show up, you know, in your inbox overnight. I understand there can be a lag time involved there.
Right. I guess from what Melanie explained to me, and Dennis might be able to offer additional input on this, but that if I think the Mountains, if you read their comment and the reason they wanted this additional measure, they were concerned if UVC light is used later in the summer growing season where plant mass is greater. The concern was that the UVC light can cause the plant die off rather quickly. And since it's not being hand pulled or sucked out of the water like some of the other measures, their concern was that the large amount of plant biomass, you know, that would be laying on the bottom of the lake could impact the BMI. And Melanie's point was the test that they did was sort of a late summer test, and that the next summer when they did the monitoring, they found no impact or no negative impact to BMI.
Okay.
And I'll just add.
Yep.
I'll add that we've seen the same results. You know, UVC light is a fairly new technique that we've been using, but we've seen the same results with BMI. Using bottom barriers, both for plants and for clams, which are two very different materials, and even a jute material, which is a kind of a natural fiber, we've seen the same results that BMI bounces back very, very quickly after the treatment is removed, and if not in greater numbers because there's more room for them to breathe and better water quality. So those results are very consistent across the board as we're removing plants. So just wanted to add that.
Yeah, I think that's helpful, Nicole. This is Dennis again from TRPA. The monitoring that we have suggests there is an impact during the treatment, but shortly after treatment is completed, the levels bounce back for the beneficial BMI. And so we don't expect to have any long-term impacts. But if it's the desire of the officer, we can add additional statements regarding inclusion of longer-term monitoring.
Good. Thank you, Dennis. My only suggestion is to consider in that sentence that's shown in red underline for added language, if it seems to be we may want to say if monitoring indicates long-term adverse impacts are occurring, recognizing that there's going to be a short-term impact, as you all have described.
We can do that.
Sounds good to me.
And Rob, as the way that this measure is worded, that says that the Water Board may require, does that limit that to the CEQA component, or does that applicable also to the TRPA's role in both the review and the environmental documentation to support it?
Well, Lahontan's one of the permitting agencies, and as a permitting agency, I think it would apply to the entire program for all, you know, implementers. And so, I think it's applicable to, you know, CEQA and TRPA's review. Okay. To be able to make the findings, there's no impacts.
And would that same hold for projects that are on the Nevada side?
Given TRPA's role, yes.
Okay, thank you. Dennis, I just had a question on the permit, the edit to the permit condition. I was looking back through my special condition number 2, and I'm looking for where is that date we want to update?
In special condition 2, it refers to August 2020.
Got it. I see it.
And we would change that to January 2021.
Great. Thank you. That makes sense. Good. Any more comments, Nicole, Dennis, or Rob?
None here. Thank you.
None for me.
None for me either.
Very good. At this point, I'd like to open the public hearing on this matter. Robbie, if you will please look for a show of hands. Anyone wishing to offer public comment?
Any member of the public who would like to address the hearings officer may do so at this time by utilizing the hand-raising feature of the GoToWebinar app. Please raise your hand and I will announce and unmute you. And you'll have 3 minutes to make your comments. No hands were raised, so we can continue with the review of this agenda item.
Thank you, Robbie. Seeing how we have no additional public comment on this item, I will close the public hearing and take action on the project. Based on the information that's contained in the staff report, in the attached environmental document, both as amended, and as we have amended the Chapter 4 and the Chapter 81 findings, we also have findings to make for Chapter 80. I will approve the project as it has been amended today and leading up to today's meeting based on the record that we have today and as we have discussed as part of presentations by staff and by the environmental document consultant. But this also includes a mitigated finding of no significant effect based on the environmental checklist that was prepared and Article 5G findings that are contained in the staff report. We'll approve that and then approve the project as it's been proposed with the amendments that have been made based on the evidence that's in the record and subject to the conditions in the draft permit. Marcia, did I miss anything on that list?
No, I think that sounded good.
Thank you. That concludes our public hearing items. Under item 5 today and item 6, we are at the point where I will adjourn the meeting. Thank you, everyone, for participating today. I appreciate your input and the discussion that we had, and I'll adjourn the meeting. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.